This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I think I'm off tomorrow. Yay! Back on my off on Friday schedules. Last week, I actually came in and worked on Friday because of the Memorial Day weekend. Labor Day weekend. Is that right? I think so. It was a little bit different to actually be into work on Friday. But that was all fine. I've got my hours for the week. I'm good. I'm going to be taking my parents grocery shopping tomorrow morning. So, and get our grocery shopping done. And then I won't actually be doing any writing tomorrow because I ordered the proof copy for Amanda and the Harefoot, no, Amanda and the Cog-Shifting Imp this morning. I received back a couple of copies of Amanda and the Harefooted Flame today, so I had that on my mind. But anyways, it looks like at this point that I am on schedule to have these mailed out before we celebrate our 25th wedding anniversary. So that's good. I'm happy about that. And I've started working on, I think, what will be the next series. I think I'm going to make a run at the Realmers series now. There are actually more books in the Farforth Fables. There's probably 6 more books in the Farforth Fables, and I could work on those and probably have them done in 3 years. But I'm going to let that sit for a little bit and see what it does. I've got 3 books done on that now. That's plenty to see if more people are interested or if they're not. And the next series is the series that has 24 books in it. And I got to thinking, you know, if I put out 2 a year, that will take me 12 years. And 12 years is about the amount of time that I have until I retire. So if I work on those, it might make those 12 years go a little faster. And besides which, I kind of, you know, have an idea of how that's going to go and how to tie it together. And I may have mentioned in the past that series is actually going to use as a thematic atmosphere. It's going to use the atmosphere in Yeats's The Second Coming, which, if you haven't read the poem by Yeats, The Second Coming, go read it right now, because it is a fabulous, fabulous poem. And there's so many lines in there that you will recognize. All things fall apart, the center cannot hold, the falcon cannot hear the falconer. I mean, it's, there's just some wonderful, wonderful lines in there. And so I'm going to use the emotional atmosphere of that poem, break it apart. It is in the public domain now. Break it apart into components, and then each book will kind of use whatever literary illustrations there are in that particular phrase, and then I'll add my own. In addition to that, I was trying to figure out, okay, but what are these books going to be about? The whole series, as a large series, is about the individual and the hierarchy. It's going to be about that whole thing of what happens when you organize humans into hierarchies, and what is inherently a characteristic of individuals that are working as individuals and individuals who are working in hierarchy. And as part of all that, I'm also going, since it's set at the end of the millennium, I'm also going to get into organized religion hierarchies versus individuals spreading the message outside of hierarchies. And I was trying to figure out, okay, but what is the individual messages that I'm going to use inside each book? You know, thematically, what is going to be that message inside each book? And then it dawned on me this week. At first I thought, oh, maybe I can tear apart the Sermon on the Mount and do something thematically there. And then after I made that jump, I went, wait a minute, I've got the parables that are sitting out there. And so last night, part of what I did last night is I looked through, specifically looking for the phrases Kingdom of Heaven and Kingdom of God, looking for parables or looking for sayings about the Kingdom of Heaven, about the Kingdom of God, and finding if there were things thematically that I could use. Certainly there are parables, because Jesus tells parables where he starts out and he says, the Kingdom of Heaven is like a woman who is working with yeast, and as she kneads the dough, she spreads the yeast throughout the dough. The kingdom of Heaven is like, there's the landlord who goes on a trip and he gives talents to people and then he's coming back. What's interesting to me about parables is that Jesus identifies that parables have a specific purpose. And what he says about the specific purpose of parables is parables are to confuse the general public, which is a really interesting thing. Parables are designed to get people to think the wrong thing. Now, I know there's going to be some people that are going to say, what? But what Jesus said to his disciples was, the reason that I speak in parables to the general populace, to the crowds, I speak in parables to them so that it will be, what is written of them will be true, that hearing they do not hear and seeing they do not see. But he says, but to you is given to know the secrets of the kingdom. And so there are some parables that Jesus explains, like the parable of the sower. But me, in my little subversive way, thinks, okay, then, if parables were meant to be inherently confusing, then maybe I can dig into the parables and... excuse me? Long day. And dig through them and actually find some things thematically that I can use concerning the Kingdom of Heaven and compare and contrast to what I believe the kingdom, the millennial kingdom, will be like at the end of the millennium. And so there's going to be some interesting parallels and things in there. And this is going to be an interesting dance for me, because it's going to be set up on the same sort of thematic thing as your typical,
excuse me,
action adventure / superhero / futuristic / Star Trek / Star Wars type environment, where, you know, you've got the heroes and they're doing battle and they're facing impossible odds and that they come through at the last moment. But that's really just going to be a cover setting for exploring a more subversive theme about the role of hierarchy and the results of hierarchy versus the power of the individual in terms of relationships. So it's going to be interesting. It's just going to be interesting to see how this will all come together. So I'm pretty excited about that. And over the next little bit here, I'm going to be finishing up getting the beta copies out for the current book, and then making the corrections for the previous two Amanda Farforth fables.
Excuse me.
And then once I get clear of all that, I'm actually going to be prepping to start the new series in January. And not only do I have just outline prep to do, but I also have some cover work prep to do. I have to determine how these covers are actually going to get created, because this type of book, you want images of the heroes on the front and their hero stances, or in some kind of an action pose, something. And it needs to be fairly bold and curvaceous, all those things that these types of books have on the front of them. And of course, I don't have an author, an artist, and I know of artists who would probably assist me, but I can't pay them, so I'm not going to impose on them, and I pretty much have to do everything myself. But there is this tool called Poser that I'm going to try out. Anyways, enough of that. On to the topic of the week. I saw this TED Talk, and I thought, oh, this is very interesting. It was given by Kelly McGonigal. And her name is really, really familiar, but I didn't research. I think maybe she's done some other TED Talks. And the name of the talk was How to Make Stress Your Friend. And here's what's interesting about this. She had a confession to make in the beginning. She said, for years she's been telling people that stress makes you sick. It increases your risk of everything from the common cold to cardiovascular disease. She said, basically, I had turned stress into the enemy. She said, but I've changed my mind. And she said, today I want to change yours. Now then, what made her change her mind? Well, there was a study that tracked 30,000 adults in the United States for 8 years. They started the study by asking people, how much stress have you experienced in the last year? And they also asked them, do you believe that stress is harmful for your health? And then they used public death records to figure out who died of the people. And she said, in fact, there was a 43% increased risk of dying from the people who experienced a lot of stress. But the kicker was, it was only true for the people who also believed that stress is harmful to your health. Now that's really, really interesting. She said, when the study looked at people who said they were under a lot of stress, but they didn't believe that stress was harmful to their health, she said those people, in fact, had the lowest risk of dying of anyone in the study, including people who had relatively little stress. So, what she's saying is, if you're under a lot of stress and you believe it's harmful for you, it really, really is. 43% increased chance of dying. But if you're under a lot of stress and you don't believe it's harmful, you have a completely different response to it. She said over that 8 years that this study was tracking deaths, she said the researchers estimated that 182,000 Americans died prematurely, not from stress, but from the belief that stress is bad for you. Okay, that's really interesting. She said that translates to over 20,000 deaths a year. And she said if that estimate is correct, it would make believing that stress is bad be the 15th largest cause of death in the United States, killing more people than skin cancer, HIV, AIDS, and homicides. She said, now then, so there have been some scientific studies on all of this, and she said, when you change your idea about stress, you can actually change your body's response for them. For instance, if instead of looking at stress, going, oh, I'm so stressed, I just can't make it anymore, instead of thinking about it like that, you say, yeah, I'm in a little stress to get this done, but you know what? All these signs, my heart beating faster, you know, I'm breaking out in a cold sweat, all this kind of stuff, that's just my body energizing me to tackle this problem. My heart's beating faster, that means I'm getting more oxygen. You know, my brain cells are firing. I'm thinking about this problem. I can't get away from thinking about this problem. That's because the more I think about it, I'm going to find a solution. You know, all this kind of stuff. What's interesting is I had breakfast with a friend today. And our waitress had the opportunity to move up to be on the head of shifts. Waitressing, the shift leader, something. Anyways. And she sat down, she was talking to us, because we're friends. Because I've gone to that restaurant for a while, so I'm friends. We're friends. So she sat down and talked to us. She said, I just don't know if I should take this. I'm afraid of failing. I'm like, you're not going to fail. She said, well, I'm afraid. I said, fair is good. Come on. You know, that gets you energized. You know, it makes you. I said, you're good with people. You know this inside and out. By the time I finished pep talking her, you know, she was like, okay, I'm going to do it. Good, go do it. Because this is a stepping stone for her, and it means that she can not only get more paid, it's possible she can move up to a different job like trainer and stuff. So stress, if we look at stress as the body's response to focus us in, to get us more energy, to help us solve these problems, our body actually physically responds differently. The Kelly McGonigal was saying that when you look at somebody under stress who believes stress is bad for them, you can see their arteries constricting, their blood vessels are constricting. She said the heart is still pounding, but that constriction is actually not good for you, because it makes the heart work much harder. However, she said, when you see people under stress who believe that stress is good for them, you don't see that constriction in their blood vessels. She said, the blood vessels just look normal, which is a much more healthy cardiovascular profile. And she said, it actually looks like what happens in moments of joy and courage, which was interesting. And she said, over a lifetime of stressful experience, this one biological change could be the difference between a stress-induced heart attack at age 50 or living well into your 90s. She said the other thing that was really interesting that science has been talking about now is that stress makes you social. And she backed that up by saying that stress actually produces a multitude of hormones in our bodies, one of which is oxytocin. Oxycontin is something different. That's a painkiller, if I remember right, an addicting painkiller. Oxytocin, and we all kind of remember oxytocin as the huggable hormone that makes you want to go hug people. But I mean, basically what oxytocin does in us is it makes us want to reach out to others and make connections to others. And she said, when stress when you have stress and oxytocin is activated, it makes you want to seek the support of others. And she said there's actually a lot of great things about oxytocin. She said it's a natural anti-inflammatory. It helps your blood vessels stay relaxed during stress, but it also affects the heart, and it actually helps repair the heart from some of the damage that can be done if you are under prolonged stress. In other words, and you believe that stress is bad for you, in other words, built right into our stress response is the production of a chemical that encourages us to reach out to others, which is really interesting. And as we reach out to others, then of course that helps us to deal with the stress better. She said there was another study that was done where it tracked like 1,000 people and again asked them similar questions. How much stress have you experienced in the last year? But then they also ask, how much time have you spent helping out friends, neighbors, and people in your community? And then they looked at the public death records again. And she said, you know, the bad news is that for every major stress life experience, like financial difficulties or family crisis, it increased the risk of dying by 30% for every single one. Increased the risk of dying. I'm backing into my garage. However, for people who spent time caring for others, family members, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, they showed absolutely no stress-related increase in dying. Zero. She said, caring for others creates resilience. And so she said, once again, we see that the effects of stress are not inevitably harmful. So she concluded by saying that the compassionate heart that finds joy in meeting and connecting with others, and yes, your pounding physical heart working so hard to give you energy and strength, and when you the compassionate heart that finds joy and meaning in connecting with others, and yes, your pounding physical heart working so hard to give you strength and energy, and when you choose to view stress this way, you're not just getting better at stress, you're actually making a profound statement. You're saying that you can trust yourself to handle life challenges, and you're remembering that you don't have to face it alone. Okay, that's good. That's good. And you know, I don't know why I think that's so good. Because I have one hammer in life. It's flesh and spirit. And to the man with one hammer, all the world's a nail. So what's really happening here is you've got two things going on. You've got the flesh telling you, oh, that stress is bad for you. That stress is bad for you. That stress is bad for you. Ooga, booga, booga, booga. Ooh, see those physical responses? Ooh, you're in trouble now. You're going to have a heart attack. Ooga, booga, booga, booga. You need to just ball up in a little ball and roll into the corner and stay by yourself because, ooh, you're under so much stress. Ooh, boo, boo, boo. You know, instead of viewing it that way in your body, if you view it as, you know what? I do have a lot that I need to get done. I have some really exciting things that I'm trying to accomplish, and my heart is pounding faster, and I'm feeling like, man, there's so many things hitting me. I had something yesterday where I knew I was going to be talking about this, where like it's pretty typically pretty quiet because everything's working okay. I get one call, and they're like, we've really got to have some data, you know, like in the next hour and a half, and we don't know how to pull it. And they were trying to use some of their tools, and their tools weren't working right. As it turns out, the tools were working right. They were working as designed, but it was because of the data they were trying to pull. So I'm working on that, and then I get another phone call from somebody else. I got to have these new forms right now, you know. And so, you know, I'm having to make this decision, which to which, and I can feel things are, you know, stress is climbing a little bit. And I was like, no, you know what? This is exciting. This is exciting. Look, here we go. We can figure this out. And I did get both of the things figured out. I got everybody supplied with the information they need. Everything was great. Just go. Because instead of reacting to those feelings, listening to the flesh telling me, oh, blah, 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 this is bad, if you react to them by saying, you know what, this is just gearing me up to get this done, and I am going to be getting this done, and if I'm having more problems than I can handle, there are people that I can reach out to. I don't need to be isolated. I have friends that can help me. And going at it that way is the way you go at it when you listen to your spirit, as opposed to listening to your flesh and getting all bound up and having a heart attack over stress. And once again, we come back to the basic principle that the flesh leads you to destruction, but the spirit leads you to life. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.